Thank you, Jeff. It kind of tells you how many years I've been with University of Nebraska in that title. So with that, we'll move right in. This is kind of interesting. In 2013 in southwest Nebraska, in the same corn field, we've seen some pretty decent ears, and that was an extremely dry year, along with 2012, which means we don't save any water for the corn crop. And then in that same field, there was also some nubbins and so forth. Well, what do you think caused it? Well, this 40-foot draper head may be part of the reason. And this is some of the better corn in that field. And then where those nubbins were at, the corn looked like this. And it might be kind of tied to this kind of thing. As you look at it, that center 20 feet behind that draper head is where the residue got spread in pretty good corn. The outer 10 feet on either side only had nubbins, all because there was no residue out there. One of the first things I did when I got out of college in 1960, I actually went to Douglas County, Omaha, and we started working with the ridge plant system. And that was quite an improvement over what we were doing, because before that we always plowed and disc and so forth. Here we went in and basically the ridge we built the year before and knocked off the ridge and planted into it. And it really worked out great, because we threw any volunteer weed seed and so forth out of the way row, and volunteer crops, and really, really worked out great for cultivation and so forth, the control of the weeds. And this is what one of those ridge planters looked like. We even had some farmers that extended the width of them out there, especially those in organic, and wanted even better weed control out of the ridge plant system. This was kind of interesting. Several years ago, went to a field, and actually we had a corn and sorghum study out there on yields. And every six rows, there was a row of foxtail. And, of course, you blame that on what? Application, right? That's what it's got to be. No, what it was in this case was the planter marker, planting the weed seed. Really did a good job of planting the weed seed. And that's one disadvantage of tillage, is it plants a lot of seed. But people still like to till. This is Lake McConaughey in 2005, the lowest it's ever got, and a few years later, we're glad to see the big lake recover. This is where I'm at out of North Platte and southwest central area or southwest Nebraska. And in Nebraska, we really have some fluctuating rainfalls and so forth. This is the average over the years. You see the 30s when it was extremely dry. 52 to 56 is when I was in high school, and you see those years in there being really dry. And this is our precipitation there at North Platte, where I do my research and so forth. And you can see, like, 2002 was really dry in there, 2012 and 13 extremely dry years. And in 2002, that dry year, this is what some corn looked like right out south of North Platte. You can see the wheat stubble wasn't very good, though. There wasn't much out there, but the corn, some of it just grew up and died, just ran out of water, and that was the end of that. Okay, I was actually born in eastern Nebraska, David City, and you can see 55 and 56 extremely dry years. On our farm, 52 to 56 was extremely dry all the way through there. And how did we farm back then? That was before the days of atrazine and all these other good herbicides. We plowed and disc and harrowed and so forth, all kinds of tillage operations, which dried out the soil, destroyed any residue and so forth. Then we got ready to plant. Most years, we'd have to use a lister to go down and find some moisture to germinate the seed. So this is what the field looked like after planting. And if we did get some rain, we could have erosion. Wind erosion is another thing, and I remember some of that wind erosion in those dry years. And but this is north of our water lab out in west central Nebraska, And you can't hardly see the road in front of you. This is on January the 24th, 2014. And if you look really, really close, you can see a farmer out there trying to save his wheat land. That was planted to winter wheat and so forth, and he was out there. Well, a lot of that soil came over on our land and so forth. We planted wheat that fall in 2014. Guess what happened to plant that wheat that we planted in that soil that blew in? It all died. Yeah, it winter killed. Once we got out of that area, it was fine, but all that winter killed on our land. Okay, moving back to those dry years that we had in 52 to 56, and why I got so interested in soil conservation and crop residue management and so forth, and this is what our fields would look like that year. We fed cattle not this big and so forth, but I remember as a teenager making quite a few trips to Minnesota up here, not too far from Minneapolis, hauling corn back to Nebraska to feed our cattle. Something you couldn't do with CDLs and all those kinds of things nowadays, but made quite a few trips up Minnesota here hauling corn back to Nebraska. We all know we're number one in irrigation. We lost our football ranking quite a while back, in case anybody pays attention to that. But we had a lot of irrigation. This is prior to 1940, the number of irrigation wells basically only in the Platte Valley. And then, of course, we've got irrigation wells. We really need to be concerned about crop water use so we don't have a lot more of this groundwater level change. As you can see, those areas that are not in blue, we've got some real problems there, so we really want to do a better job of managing our irrigation water. One thing is, when we get some rainfall and so forth, we want it to infiltrate, don't we? If you take a conventional system, and this is with controlled traffic, if you get like a 3-inch rain in an hour, only 2/10 is going to soak in those wheel traffic areas. In the soft rows, it's hard to believe it, but you get still less than a 1/2 inch of soaking in out of that rain. Get over to the no-till systems, in the traffic rows, it isn't very good either. Yeah, only 0.6 inch in an hour. So if you had a 3-inch rain, you get a little bit more than a 1/2 inch soaking in. But in soft rows with no traffic, over 4 inches per hour, it would all soak in. We not only need no-till, we need controlled traffic. Very, very important to make the system really work for us. And this just shows you this year on a field that was worked, basically all the water ran off. And then those two factors that are most detrimental to soil health are erosion and the loss of soil organic matter. Both of those are really critical, and both caused by tillage and so forth. Here's some work Norm Klucke did at Garden City, Kansas, and he actually started this work in at North Platte, Nebraska, and then went to greener pastures in Kansas and so forth. And you can see the evaporation, what part it is on evapotranspiration. But with bare soil, irrigate once a week, it's about 32%. If you have to irrigate twice a week, which is most cases you do, if you don't have any residue out there, it's over a third of your crop water, the use is going to be evaporation. You go out to good wheat or corn stubble, let's go to wheat stubble and irrigate once a week, which you probably do if you have good wheat stubble out there. You can reduce that all the way to 15%. So if you say crop water use is like 25 inches, 20%, that's 5 inches of water you don't need to apply. Plus, if you got bare ground, you also had a couple tillage operations probably out there, which is probably going to cost you another inch of water. So you can really save a lot of water. Simon Van Dunk did an interesting study on soybean residue. All they did here was go and rake the residue off. They didn't incorporate it. They just raked it off. He wanted to see if that little bit of soybean residue, and there's not a whole lot of residue from soybeans, is there, would make a difference on crop water use. And this is kind of interesting. They irrigated according to where there was residue, and they got 197 bushel. The yield where there wasn't residue, where they removed it, yielded 172 bushel, or 25 bushel less. So you can see even there now, they figured out, you know, if you put 2 or 3 inches of water on, you could compensate for that, but why use that extra water? Okay, this is the crop water, or what we call the ecofallow system, planting corn or grain sorghum into winter wheat stubble. And always want to include, if I give a talk in Nebraska, I always try to include football. You know, that's very, very important. No, that's not why I put this slide in. But in the early days of planting no-till corn in the winter wheat residue that was treated like with atrazine and paraquat back in those days to control the weeds, and we had a farmer call, and he says, Bob, he says, got a couple of cornfields, and this one field, dryland corn, it's a lot greener on half than the other half. My brother-in-law and I was flying over that. We couldn't figure out why, because we planted the same hybrid all the way across the field. We used the same fertilizer program all the way across the field, and used the same pesticide control program. Everything was the same all the way across the field. We landed, went over, and then looking around, yeah. And we checked yields on that, and where they took off the residue, and it made 97 bushel. What they left the residue on, it made 117. This was back in the 70s. Unbelievable yields for that area, because our people were used to 25 and 30 bushel yields where they conventionally farmed it. So really some great improvements that we saw back then. Now looking at some work that we did back in Revelo County, we've got some people from that area here. On October 27th, this is what our wheat plot looked right north of McCook. And across the road there was a plot that looked just like this, that the farmer had planted really early. Okay, this is our wheat variety test that year, average of 42 varieties in there, 74.4 bushel, and some high yields, almost the highest one close to 90 bushel. And it was harvested with a stripper header, and this is what the residue looked like, and we planted skip row corn in the next year, and this is another shot of it, and this is the corn. And you can see on 25 hybrids, we averaged just about 135 bushel, with a couple real close to 150 bushel. What happened across the road where that guy planted early? Well, it got every disease in his wheat because he planted too early, which is typical. And he planted corn too. He actually ended up grazing it out because it wasn't any good for the grain. He planted corn too. Remember, we averaged about 135 bushel. What did he do with his corn? Well, he figured it wasn't worth harvesting for grain. So he cut it for silage. Okay. Now, this is the worst question I get. What to do after you cut silage on dry land? I tell them not to. Yeah, the residue is very, very important. But you got to do something to protect that soil that will blow away and so forth. So he did, going down in the lower right-hand column, he planted some wheat out there. If we take that field of ours, which is across the road, and this is a good summary slide to end up with here, it yielded 75 bushel on wheat, 135 bushel on corn, and then in the farmer went back and planted corn again, continuous corn, and made about 135 bushel. It was a pretty dang good year for with precipitation and so forth. Going to that field across the road, he ended up grazing out that wheat. He cut it for silage for the corn. And then I went out in the field and counted heads and so forth and number of plants and all that kind of good bit. And then I estimated the wheat yield. I didn't figure I had enough courage to ask him what his wheat was going to make, so I wanted to get an estimate out there. But you can see, you know, how much difference crop water residue really makes in crop water use, like in southwest Nebraska. Do we have time for a question? Okay. Thank you.